Hey, everybody. This is the Between the Ropes podcast. I am Brian Fritz. Hope you are having a great week. It is a busy, busy week when it comes to wrestling. A lot of things to get to. It's funny how last week, and it seems like this happens all the time, that I dropped the podcast, put that out last week, and then within hours was the news that Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling are going to be running a show next year at Madison Square Garden. And there's been other big news since then, and we've got Hulk Hogan back in the WWE Hall of Fame. We've got the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. We've got WWE television this week as they're building to SummerSlam. We've got the G1 tournament going on right now as well. So a lot of things to get to here on the podcast. I'll be talking with Nick Hausman from WrestleZone coming up here in just a few minutes, and we'll be running everything down. Want to mention a couple of things real quick first. Go check out my latest post that I did for Sporting News. The easiest way to find those is follow me on Twitter. I'm at Brian Fritz, and you can see the links that I put up there for my Sporting News posts. So a couple of them for this week. The first one, an interview with Matt Sydal, of course, the Impact X Division champion. He's going to be facing Brian Cage Sunday at Slammiversary. He is a very interesting guy, to say the least. And this is an example of somebody who takes his real life beliefs and puts that into the character that we all see on television. And like I said, he's a very interesting guy, very spiritual guy. He has an interesting perspective when it comes to the way that he approaches wrestling and life. And he has some pretty interesting anecdotes for the way that he talks about wrestling. And he was even using some big words that I didn't even know if they were real words. They all were. I had to look them up. He has a very expansive vocabulary, but it was an interesting conversation. So check that out. It's on Sporting News right now. And like I said, there, he's getting ready to face Brian Cage coming up at Slammiversary on Sunday. That will be live on pay-per-view. And then also check out the post that just went out on Wednesday with the latest entrant into the Mae Young Classic tournament that's coming up here. So you can check that out as I've got the exclusive announcement for the latest entrant into the Mae Young Classic. And the tapings for that are going to be taking place August 8th and 9th. And then the tournament is expected to air sometime later this summer on the WWE Network. They don't have an exact date for when it's going to be airing yet, but that is the plan right now, is for it to air later on in the summer on the network. So let me get in a couple of other plugs here really quick. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast. Do that on iTunes. Rate and review us. Helps us out tremendously. So please do that. You can also find the podcast on Google Play. We're on the TuneIn app, Blog Talk Radio, just about everywhere that you can find podcasts. You will find the Between the Ropes podcast. So please subscribe. Help spread the word as well. And then also, please follow us on social media. We're at Between the Ropes. I'm at Brian Fritz. You can check out the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Between the Ropes. I know some people have still been posting some different questions out there, and I have not gotten to the questions the last couple of podcasts while Michael has been taking some time off. So here's what I'm going to do. Here is the plan as it sits right now. So I plan on doing another podcast later on this week, and it will just be Q&A. So if you do have a question, and I'm going to be putting out some links as well and asking for questions, I'm going to be putting it out on Facebook and on Twitter. So if you have a question, please send it our way. You can also email us, btrmailbag@gmail.com, and I will make sure to get to all the questions. So that's the plan right now, unless my schedule goes totally haywire. But by the end of the week, I want to do another podcast, and it will just be Q&A. Also, a special thank you to everybody that is supporting Between the Ropes on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Please support us there. You get the ad-free version of the podcast every week. You get your exclusive RSS link over there, so you get that, plus some bonus podcasts that we do each and every month just for you, our great fans that support us on Patreon, especially at certain levels. Even if you can only support us for $1, $2 a month, that would be fantastic. That means that you really like what we're doing and you're going to support us and you're able to do that. And I really appreciate it. If you cannot do that, hey, I still like you a lot. You're listening to the podcast. Please spread the word. But if you can't support us on Patreon, whether it's $1, $2 a month, or if you can be part of the other tiers, please do that as well. And that would be fantastic. All right, let's talk some wrestling with Nick Hausman from WrestleZone here on the Between the Ropes podcast. First timer on the podcast, Nick Hausman from Russell Zone. Nick, why is it taking so long for you to be on the podcast?
I had my maintenance guy come by my apartment this morning.
I mean, generally, why is it taking so long? I didn't mean about necessarily today, why you've been a slacker. We started late.
Oh, I thought you were trying to call out that I was late for our recording here, which is, again, I had a sync issue, but it's fixed now. I have a working sync again. Why it's taken me so long to do this podcast, that's on you, Fritz. That is completely on you.
No, I don't think so.
I've been awaiting the invite.
You could have invited yourself, and I would have acquiesced, probably.
That's rude. I don't like to ask people to do things. I like to let opportunities come to me, because they mean more that way.
Speaking of opportunities, here's a segue. You are going to be flying out of town coming up here. So where are you going, and what are you doing?
I'm going to beautiful Norfolk, Virginia. I'm going to be the table announcer. I can't call myself the ring announcer. I'll be the table announcer for the World Arm Wrestling League's Superstar Showdown Series. I think it's the final event of their season, and I'll be doing the table announcing for it.
Really? What exactly goes into being the table announcer?
It's just like what you do at UFC or boxing or anything like that. It's my job to, introduce the competitors to the table, say their name. This is going to be on Bleacher Report Live. So if you want to download the Bleacher Report app, you can actually watch me do this live and enjoy the various pulls, as they're called in arm wrestling. That's what a match, it's called a pull. Each match is a series of pulls, usually best of three, sometimes best of five. If it's a final match in a tournament, something like that. And I'll be. I've done this a few times. I'm a regular with the World Arm Wrestling League. This will be my. It's got to be at least six or seven shows I've done for him now.
Do you have any special catchphrase that you use when the guys are ready to compete?
No, not when they're coming to the not when they're coming to the table per se. I'll say coming to the table, right? Mm. But last season was a little different than this season. This season they got the company got bought by Turner Sports, and they're under the Bleacher Report umbrella, so it's a huge deal. They're killing it. The World Arm Wrestling League is. Last season they were not earned by Turner, and it was a little bit more loose, and we did a lot more shows. I was on the road a little bit more, and they'd give me more freedom to engage with the crowd. They wanted a hype man. I'm like the rodeo clown, right? You come to watch the guys ride the bull. But when that's not going on, you got to have something to laugh at. That was me. And in a match, in a pull between arm wrestlers, if they start the pull, right, and they're both pushing each other so hard and they're so sweaty and stuff like that, their hands slip, right, and they lose their grip, then the match is stopped, and then you go to the strap where you literally take a piece of material, leather. Ours is like a synthetic type strap, and you tie the arm wrestler's hands together so that you can't slip, right? And then I would say, "We're going to the strap." And then everyone in the crowd would go, "Strap, strap, strap." And we did it last season. It was a big hit. We did it at pretty much every show, but this season I haven't done that. That's not been part of the new running order, the strap.
Can you at least do a Bruce Buffer turn when you're introducing each person? The dramatic turnaround the other way to introduce each competitor?
I was asked, I did the first show. I called the first show of the season, and I'm calling the last show of the season. And what I remember at the first show is they wanted me to be more Bruce Buffery in a few ways. But they particularly wanted me to hold an index card so I could do the Bruce Buffer point. So I do that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Do you do the jump up in the air when you get ready to announce a match?
No, just okay. I have to keep as much of it my own as possible. It makes me uncomfortable when people tell you to do things like other people, where I'm like, well, that's their thing. Can I be Nick Hausman?
That would be nice. Yeah. Now I do have to ask this. Have you witnessed, since you are now a seasoned pro at handling this and you've seen many an arm wrestling contest?
I have.
Has there been an over the top moment? Has anybody gone and turned the hat around backwards to get extra power?
Well, the hat turning is a thing for sure. Not all of them do it. I mean, there's a guy, Jamie Sheldon, who wears a fedora to the table. He's known for that. We also, we have a lot. There's all kinds of things, but there's definitely guys that do the backwards hat turn thing. And they usually do it before the first pull. It's not like they wait to the third pull to do it. It's usually they come to the table, they turn the hat backwards. I will say, as far as memorable arm wrestling moments go, the very first show I went to, a woman's arm got broken at the table.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it was this huge, huge snap. It filled the room. I couldn't fathom what was going on at that moment. And all of the arm wrestlers, when that happens in a tournament, they have to get together and vote if they're going to continue on, or if they're all like, no, I can't do it today. Cause you know, the sound of an arm being broken is in your head. You know,
I was going to say, was it that bad to where you could actually see the break? It was one of those grotesque injuries.
No, I think it was in her, God, this is a while ago. I think it was up in her upper arm. What is that called? Not the forearm, the bicep area. What's the bone under the femur? That's not the femur. That's a leg.
Right.
Anyway, but that bone, that it snapped, and there's always medical people on hand, even if it's small tournaments. They got to it real fast. It wasn't bloody. There wasn't like a bone sticking out of the arm or anything, but she broke it. Yeah, it snapped. It was very loud.
Damn.
So, yeah. I told you were going to enjoy me telling you what I was doing.
Yeah, because I honestly did not know. You just said, ask me about this.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know I did anything with the World Arm Wrestling League?
Honestly, I did not.
Okay, there you go. Go check it out. I'm going to give him a cheap plug here, and then we can move on to wrestling. WALUnderground.com. WALUnderground.com. Get into it. It's an amazing sport. I love these people. It's anybody... You know, you see people, mechanics, you see doctors, you see lawyers, you see scientists, all walks of people. They walk to that table, and this isn't you have to run 100 yards. This is you got to do one thing. You got to muscle another person's, because there's females that compete as well. But you got to muscle somebody else's hand or outthink them, outwork them, outmaneuver them. You got to get their hand on the table. It's very exciting, cool stuff. And the stories are great. The people are great.
Can I ask you one more question about this?
Sure. Go for
okay.
it.
Are there people that participate in this with the arm that they use to arm wrestle with? Is it a lot bigger than their other arm?
But most of them do both arms.
Okay.
There's right-handed division. There's left-handed. But you know, most guys do both and they're pretty equal. Most of the guys are pretty equally distributed because they want to be able to compete left and right. You know, why show up to a tournament and only compete in half of it? Right.
Right. So, well, I didn't know about that. I just wondered, I had this thing in my mind wondering, like, there's a guy or somebody's walking in there and like their right arm is like four times as big as their left arm.
Yeah, no, that's not the case. You know who I'm trying to get into it? And we got very close last season is Scott Flash Norton. Is a prolific arm wrestler. It's something he's always been known for. I don't know if you knew this or not.
I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott Norton traveled the world. He was was he in the movie Over the Top or like
think he was.
They had a touring group. I know way too much about arm wrestling. The Over the Top guys, after the movie, there was like a tour of those guys who go across the country arm wrestling as like a show. And Scott Norton was, I know, a part of that, but he competed all over the world. Anyway, long story short, I reached out to Scott and he was like, you know what? I've seen WAL on ESPN. I'm absolutely interested in doing this. And he started training and we were going to bring him in to do like an exhibition show against one of the guys. And as he got into training, he realized like just his arm couldn't do it at the level he wanted to do it anymore because of injuries and stuff. But I will tease everyone that I'm still optimistic that Scott Norton is going to somehow be involved with WAL in the not too distant future. I'm definitely trying to work on making that happen.
I just looked it up, his IMDb page, and he has one, Arm Wrestler Uncredited Over the Top 1987.
There you go. He wasn't. I knew he for sure toured with the company. There's this guy. I know that people out there love this. Go find Cobra Rhodes. Cobra Rhodes.
Nice name.
I know it sounds so much like Cody Rhodes, Cobra Rhodes. And I get to say his name. And I always imagine I'm saying Cody Rhodes. I hope I don't accidentally slip, but his name's Cobra Rhodes. And he's like, I don't know. He could be late 40s, early 70s. You know, he's one of those guys that just looks young, but has been around forever. He's a skinny guy. And there's like legends about this guy. You feel it when you talk to him, but he used to go against super heavyweights. He'd break weight class and he'd go against super heavyweights and he would win. And he's just got this crazy technique. I mean, there's two basic kind of techniques. There's a pull and then there's a top roll. A hook and a top roll. A hook is where you like take your arm and then you twist it inwards and you feel like bone on bone, the inside of your wrist against the other guy's wrist, and you're trying to push it down, right? That's the more traditional kind of arm wrestling people think of. But if you get to technique, if you twist your wrist the other way and start to kind of manipulate your fingers so they start to separate and become kind of stringy, and you keep a grip on your opponent's hand, you can start to work other muscles on the inside of their forearm that a lot of guys don't, where they're weak. And you can take a big guy and you can beat him in an arm wrestling match if you've got technique. And I've used this a couple times with some of my friends, and it does work. I've beaten dudes in arm wrestling that are bigger than me.
I had no idea it was this deep.
Oh, dude, I have. I like to go to parties with my college friends and arm wrestle these days. I mean, it's dangerous. You got to let everybody know this is very serious. Because again, I watched this woman get her arm broken, you know, and it's because her form was bad. And so you got to take it seriously. You got to keep your eyes on your hand at all times. You want to keep your head and your hand parallel to each other, because if you allow your arm to get too far back, you create too wide of an angle, you know, and that's how you snap your arm. Yeah.
Last thing about this, name the other wrestler that was in Over the Top.
The other arm wrestler that was in Over the Top.
Come on.
Oh man.
Famous guy.
Put me on the spot here. I haven't seen Over the Top definitely since I've been doing IWAL. I was like a teenager.
Terry Funk. Terry Funk's in that movie.
Terry Funk. That's right. That's how he got his like SAG card.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Because his name was Rooker, whatever. Yeah. But Terry Funk's in the movie. Yeah.
There's a kid here. There's a comedian in Chicago, Cody Melcher. And his dad is one of the arm wrestlers in that movie. And I thought that was so cool. Anyway,
did you pepper him with questions like I'm peppering you with questions, or?
No. I mean, I try to be cool about it, right?
Cool about it now because I'm asking you stuff?
I don't want to geek out to him about it, right? Cody's a super cool guy. He's a haberdasher. He's a hatman. Mm. He's totally not a guy. His dad was actually not just an arm wrestler. He was also a pro wrestler down in like the Houston area.
Well, don't you think his dad would appreciate it if you asked him questions about his career and his life?
I should probably, you know, I haven't talked to Cody in a while. This is a good reason for me to get back with Cody and you know, figure out what's going on.
Exactly,
Talk to his dad, famous dad.
Since it's the first time you've come on the podcast, and because it's been such a busy week, I will let you choose what we're going to talk about first when it comes to wrestling.
Oh man, it's dealer's choice here. What do I want to talk about from the world of pro wrestling?
Yeah, man.
Man, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like I have to talk about Rusev, right? Because I'm really sad Rusev didn't win the title. I thought it was like a good time to create a new, you know, fun villain for AJ Styles. I was really hoping we get more Rusev off the leash. But sadly not the case. How were you hoping that Rusev was going to take the title at Extreme Rules?
I would not have had a problem if he had won it, but I didn't think he had a chance really. I thought it was a little bit more, you know, AJ was still going to win it, and then, you know, I think AJ could lose it at SummerSlam, but I didn't think he was going to lose it to Rusev. But I would like to see them do more with Rusev. I mean, I've always been a guy, like I think a lot of other people, that have said they should be doing more with this guy. I mean, he's got a ton of personality. He's a good wrestler. They need other stars. I mean, they had an opportunity with him years ago when he was just this incredible heel. And, you know, he lost the match at WrestleMania to John Cena. And then after that, they just kind of pulled the plug on him. They did like that love triangle, which was really weird. And he's kind of been just out there until the Rusev Day stuff started. So I've been waiting for them to do some more stuff with him. And they kind of are, but they still are hesitant to go all the way, or at least that's not the plan yet.
Well, and here's the thing is I looked at Rusev and I was looking at, you know, Balor and Corbin kind of in the same way too. There's something interesting to me right now where there's so much focus on the guy who wins is so obviously the one they're behind. And I feel like a lot of guys are getting lost, getting fed to guys they have plans for, where other guys, they just don't know what they're doing with. And it's become such a consistent thing where I don't know. It's just something I don't even know what to make of it. It's just something I've noticed recently is there's just a lot of guys being fed to other guys with not a lot of foresight about what to do with them after they've they've lost, you know? And I feel like you could just be doing more with guys even in losses that we're not seeing at the moment. Well, I don't know if that makes sense.
I think the reason for that is simply because the way that WWE looks at things are wins and losses don't matter that much, or people will forget that you lost. We can rehab a guy instantaneously. All it takes is one big win and boom, we can turn them around. We can put them in the main event or whatever. That's their mentality. I don't believe in that, but that's the way that they look at it.
But that's what I'm thinking when I'm watching Rusev. Is like you say that if the mentality is, well, he can lose all the time as long as he's interesting in things like that. I mean, the reason I thought that Rusev should have won at Extreme Rules is because he does have this very cool, niche-y pop feel to him right now, right? And I think that should be rewarded, right? But how do you reward it if he's a bad guy, right? Like, at the same time, this shouldn't have been like Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik. This should have been like Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. There should have been two fan favorites that people were getting to enjoy watching go at each other, but instead we were fed Iron Sheik, Hulk Hogan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. By the way, looking back at it now, isn't it crazy that I think it was, what, about 3 years ago when Rusev was talking about how much he was trying to please Vladimir Putin, and they had a picture of Putin at WWE shows to play this up to the Rusev character?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird. There's a lot of weird. I mean, yeah, a whole podcast for another day, and one that I don't particularly want to get to in this political environment. But there's a lot of weird stuff with the WWE in geopolitics.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just think about it going, man, it wasn't that long ago where they were doing a storyline where he was talking about, you know, he was tight and wanted to please, you know, President Putin. And WWE would show the picture there. They were playing the Russian national anthem. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, there's just not a fort. It's just like, let's do stuff, right? And I will say that, with that aside, there's been, you know, some good stuff. You know, Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax, the Ronda Rousey stuff, I thought has all been pretty good. I think that Ronda moves like a raptor. She's the only thing on the roster right now that feels like genuine to me, you know?
Well, the thing about Ronda is she has one speed. Like, you know, in wrestling, it's like, oh, you chase after the guy, but you don't go full tilt. Like, you act like you're trying to move fast, but you really are not going full speed. Ronda goes full speed. I mean, that's why she stands out with different things like this. Like, there is no, you know, second or third gear with her. It's always, you know, fifth gear, boom, boom, boom. And that's one of the things I think that makes her really stand out, is that intensity and the way that she goes all out on all these and everything that she's been doing so far.
It is weird, right? Because in wrestling, you're always taught, take your time, right? Get the most out of every single move, every single level. And like, Ronda goes in there and it looks and feels, I mean, it very much fits her. I mean, do you see her as having that same kind of Steve Austin like potential? I mean, I kind of occasionally get shades of it, but they keep taking her off TV for whatever reason or pulling her. I don't know if they get built a mystique or not, but I want to see more Ronda Rousey just off the leash, showing up each week, raising hell, doing whatever she wants, you know?
Well, they want to do that, but at the same time, I think the way that they look at it is she's still training, she's still wanting to get better, and we want to keep her as a special attraction. We don't want people to get tired of her. So, well, you know, I think that's the way they look at it. But I get what you're saying, is that, like, if you've got a star, capitalize on it and have her out there all the time and do something with her.
Steve Austin became Stone Cold Steve Austin when he had a broken neck and couldn't do all the wrestling stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, they found stuff for him to do that was non-wrestling. You know, he would show up, he'd raise hell in one way or another, beer truck, dropping cement into limousines, you know, whatever, you know. I want to see Ronda Rousey, if you're not ready to let her go full bore in wrestling matches, that's fine. Keep the wrestling matches sporadic. Keep the fun, enjoyment, the build in between those matches, that kind of intensity that we know Ronda can bring, more of that to help build to the bouts. Less of that intensity. We're holding the intensity off for pay-per-view. I think you got enough there to spread around. I don't think they do enough with Ronda on TV.
The main event of Extreme Rules turned out to be the Iron Man match. I know I was surprised by that. I really thought that they were going to do Lashley and Reigns, you know, in that last spot, but they changed around the card, it sounds like. That was in the middle of the show. AJ and Rusev didn't close out either, which is another kind of perplexing one from a standpoint that that's a WWE championship, but they went with the Iron Man match. And, you know, there was high expectations for it, especially once they put it, you know, in that final spot, I was just like, all right, they're going to blow the roof off this place. And then they did that weird match where they ended up having 9 falls. It was overtime that lasted about 10 seconds. That was, I don't know, that was very weird. I found Extreme Rules for the most part. A lot of that show was just very weird with the booking of it. And I really thought that they handicapped a lot of the guys that were out there performing. I didn't get a lot of that. I mean, I don't know what my expectations were for the show. I thought there could be some really good wrestling. And, you know, I try not to blame the talent because I think everybody went out there and they worked hard. But, man, the booking on that show was really weird.
Yeah. You know, it's very, they're still very much writing their show. You know, we talk about how, you know, they should be rewarding or, you know, reactions, organic waves that come out from the crowd. And, man, you could not be further from that in this. You know, again, with like Rusev, it's like you're on to something organic there. Right. Maybe I don't know if he needs to beat AJ Styles, but at least present him in a light where he seems competitive and, you know, a main eventer. He wasn't a main eventer. You know, they gave him in this match that, you know, predictably a lot of people thought he would lose. Then he lost in the semi-main. I don't really have a problem with Ziggler and Rollins doing the IC title half hour Iron Man match in the main event, you know, because at least it gives the fans a chance to leave happy if the match should be very good. But I was with you. It was too many falls for me. You know, I like the Drew McIntyre. I mean, it's a little, you know, okay, of course, that guy's going to attack, cost him one. He's going to get a follow-up win. Now Rollins is going to have to battle back. But, you know, for me, I liked it went to a tie. I think it should have gone to a tie. But then that last fall, I mean, the show ended 20 minutes or 15, 20 minutes early. I would have loved for that last fall. Drew's been ejected from ringside. Give him another half hour, that last, you know, last bit of it. But that is the opposite of what we got. We got a quick finish shortly after they went to tiebreaker.
Well, McIntyre was supposedly banned from ringside, but that didn't stop him from coming out and helping Ziggler win the match. I mean, there was nothing that went on from that. The funny thing was, like, even when McIntyre got, you know, Ziggler DQ'd for one of the falls, and then he left. But before that, like, he just beat the hell out of Rollins over and over again. I was like, shouldn't he be DQ'd a second time? I'm like, he's still going. Like, the ref is like, stop, that's a fall. Okay, get out of here. And Drew just kept going. And just kept beating them up.
Yeah, just a lot of screwy stuff. Nakamura Hardy, you know, with the Randy Orton, you know, interference, right, thing like that. More screwiness. Carmella Asuka, yet Ellsworth up in the cage. More screwiness. There was a lot of shenanigans. I mean, it was, you know, it was Extreme Rules, right?
So there wasn't that many Extreme Rules matches, though.
Yeah, I mean, the B team, you know, beating Hardy and Wyatt. That thing has, I know Bray was injured there for a little bit or out for a little bit there. But there's something weird about this one too. It just doesn't, I mean, is it Matt Hardy should be a kind of quasi, I mean, Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt should be intimidating figures. I don't know how quickly they fell into this kind of weird quasi sketch comedy duo, in this division.
Well, WWE has never understood the whole, you know, Matt Hardy mystical world. They've never understood that thing. I mean, they did the one match, you know, from the Hardy compound. It was just like, all right, let's get it out of the way. Let's at least say that we did it. But, you know, they don't understand that. They don't get it. They don't want to get it. It's just like, people kind of react when Matt acts quirky and weird and he smiles and he laughs. That's all it is. I mean, it's just kind of a placeholder for everything right now. I thought that the Nakamura match, the reason why they did that, I thought it was because Jeff Hardy was really banged up. There's been some talk that he was injured. So I thought, okay, well, that's one way to get Jeff, you know, out of the picture right now, and he can go and, you know, get better. But then on SmackDown, you know, he's out there and he's having a regular match. He gets beat up afterwards by Orton, but it looks like, I guess it's not as serious as we thought when it comes to him being banged up. So I don't expect him to take time off now.
Yeah. Orton's a bad guy now.
He's a bad guy now, man.
He's a bad guy now. He's a bad man. I will say, while we're talking about Hardy and Orton and Nakamura, that spot where Orton put his finger through Jeff Hardy's ear hole was gross. And
did you notice, by the way, when Hardy came out to the ring and he was getting ready for the match, he was playing around with his left ear? And I was like, that's something different. For whatever reason, I noticed that. And I think he was just making sure, like, I don't have anything in there right now, so that way we can do this angle.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I just thought it was, I was like, that makes me physically uncomfortable.
I don't think it's painful. I don't think it's painful at all. The guy has a hole in his ear that's been built up for years for, you know, having something in there. The dude put his finger in there and he kind of just pulled him a little. I don't think it's that painful.
No, well, I mean, it's Randy Orton. I mean, and he's making it look so much worse.
Absolutely. He made it look like, oh my God, I'm ripping this guy's ear off his head. I mean, it's not like Reservoir Dogs or anything where, you know, I got the razor and I'm going to, you know, pull it off the guy. But yeah, I mean, it looked painful, but I don't really think it was. I think they did a great job of selling it.
Yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely correct. It's just, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, if I wasn't a trained professional and some dude, you know, went at some guy at a bar, right, who didn't have an earring in and grabbed him by that ear hole and just ripped it, right? Like Wayne's World style with the nipple rings, right? That happened in Wayne's World, correct?
I think so. But I mean, I've seen somebody get grabbed by the earring and a guy pulled the earring out and ripped his ear.
What? Why? Gross.
Trust me, that was gross. That was gross.
Well, but that's the stuff that I love is when I watch something and I'm like, if I genuinely saw that in the wild, if I saw that at a bar, I would be cringing. If some dude like threw a drink at another dude's face and then grabbed him by his gaping ear hole and dragged him to the ground, I would be like, what kind of a monster are you? What kind of a horrible monster are you?
Years ago, I saw two dudes brawling in downtown Orlando and one guy hit the other guy and the guy got hit. He bent over and the other guy, and I kid you not, gave him a pile driver on the sidewalk.
Wow.
Yeah.
You killed somebody that way.
He didn't kill him, luckily, but yeah. I mean, that guy was having trouble standing up because he was so drunk anyway. But then after taking a punch and a pile driver, he was down for the count.
Man, it is crazy when drunks can do pro wrestling stuff because they don't have the ability to like ward it off. Like you can do a rock bottom to a drunk.
Well, here's the thing. Well, you can do more stuff to a drunk person, you know, and drunk people will try to do more when it comes to pro wrestling than a normal person would. It doesn't mean that they will actually pull it off, but they will try it.
I had a bad habit in my younger days of when I'd get intoxicated with friends and somebody would fall over of trying to put wrestling holds on people. More often than not, the Texas Cloverleaf, because it's really easy to do. You just slide their foot underneath their other leg and just turn them upside down. You know,
when you say in the past, do you mean last year or when are you talking about?
I'm 33. We're talking mid 20s, early 20s,
31, teens. 32.
Last night with Liz pushed her over, slapped on a figure four. This is my beautiful girlfriend who may or may not be listening in the other room. I'm not sure.
You know, you mentioned the booking of some of the different guys, and we're you know, when it comes to Extreme Rules, I think a lot of us are kind of perplexed, you know, coming off that show going, okay, what are they doing here? And this has been something that's been going on in WWE for a while, because look at some of the people that we think could be, you know, big players in the company, and some of them have been, but look at a Brock Lesnar and where he's at right now to where, you know, you've got Kurt Angle coming out on Extreme Rules and he's, you know, laying down this ultimatum about how he better show up at Raw and we're going to announce an opponent and he's going to defend the Universal Championship or else I'm going to strip him of the title. And then even the following night on Raw, people are once again cheering when Kurt's talking about, I'm going to strip him of the title. People don't even want to see Brock Lesnar. They've gotten to that point with him. You've got Bayley and Sasha Banks and Asuka, who have all been minimized because WWE just does not know how to use them on the main roster. And we've seen them have success, you know, in NXT, but for whatever reason, they haven't been able to replicate that on the main roster. I mean, the Revival had really good success in NXT, but we know about tag team wrestling. I'm not saying that as an excuse, but I don't know what we all expected for them on the main roster. But like, this is something that's been going on for a little while with, you know, there's some very talented people that we think, you know, you could be doing a lot more with, and for whatever reason, this is the way WWE's been booking these guys to their detriment. And it hurts them, and they could be doing so much more and so much more business with these people. And for whatever reason, they just don't know how to utilize some talents.
Yeah. And I don't think it's that they don't know, right? I think that's a phrase that gets thrown around.
Well, like, I think one person doesn't trust it. And I think other people are like, hey, you know what? We've done this before, but they're not the final call.
Here's what I think is interesting, right? Because you very much have a booking philosophy now at WWE that puts dollars before cents, right?
Sure.
Now, you know, logically, could we sell more pay-per-views if we did an angle this way over that way? Sure. But are we going to sell more shirts if we do that angle? Because, like, there's certain stuff that you just pitched to me that's really going to cut off little girl's ability to relate to Bailey if she does these things. So we could let's kind of mix, you know, your strategy with our strategy over here, and you're getting these weird hybrids all over the place. You know what I mean? And I particularly with Bailey and Sasha, I'm disheartened by the way that it's been carried out with these two. Are they an item now?
What I was going to ask you. I don't know. I mean, are they a couple? Were they a couple? Does Sasha want to be a couple, but Bailey is kind of perplexed by it? Or are they just really good friends? I mean, I guess this is going to play out, but I don't know if they're going to do like a lesbian love angle here or what they're trying to do.
Aren't they both married to men?
Yes, they both are. Well, is Bailey married now? Or I know she was engaged or had a boyfriend, but I mean, either way, I mean, we both know that in real life that they have significant others that are male, but
yeah.
I don't know what exactly they're trying to do here. Like it might just be one of these things like they're friends. I mean, Seth Rollins even said on that show that he loves Roman Reigns. So does that mean we think that there's something going on there? No. So maybe that's exactly what they're trying to do here. But they said it so definitively. They said so over the top with Sasha talking about, you know, I have so many problems because I love you. And now we're kind of like, okay, what are you doing next with them?
Right. Well, I will say that, you know, I was watching Raw and Liz was in the other room playing video games. And when this angle played out, I brought her in and she loved it. She's like, yes, this is great. You know, they're going to be gay together. They're going to be lovers. They love each other. Lesbian storyline. So definitely got her on the hook. But I go back to what Stephanie McMahon said about Darren Young, where she was like, our wrestlers, you know, sexuality on their TV is not really something we explore a whole lot of. Now, Darren Young, the man, can be gay, but Darren Young, the character, we haven't really gone there, you know, or whatever it may be. I find it hard to believe they're going to go full bore on a lesbian love angle between Bailey and Sasha. I don't see it either.
I don't see. And here's the thing too. If they want to do that, shouldn't you do that with your performers that actually are gay?
I mean, it would, but again, you know, sure. But they're actors, right?
Right. I mean, I get that too. And sometimes they're going to be like, well, you know what? They're bigger players, or we have more plans for them, so we're going to do it, you know, with these talents instead. So I don't know.
Maybe they got to hand it. They're like, hey, here's 3 months worth of booking that's going to really pay off a love angle between Sasha and Bailey. Maybe it's great. I question that because they went from Bailey finally snapping on Sasha, which should have been a huge transformative moment that Bailey finally went there. And the next week they're doing a comedy angle with Dr. Shelby in his therapy office when I have to take a moment.
And Dr. Shelby has disappeared. He is MIA.
Okay. Fritz. The same time Dr. Shelby shows up to help Bailey and Sasha, Team Hell No was literally reuniting on SmackDown. The place that Dr. Shelby should have been was on SmackDown doing an angle with Kane and Daniel Bryan. Who wouldn't have loved to see those three reunite for some way to put the cherry on the cake here or something like that to really bring them back together? But instead of bringing them to SmackDown, they put him on Raw and found him to do something with Bailey and Sasha. I have a tinfoil hat theory. They booked him for SmackDown. And then they decided not to do whatever they were going to do with Daniel and Kane. And we're like, well, we've already got him for a day. What do we do with him? Maybe we can work him into the Bailey Sasha thing. That sounds like a good idea. I don't know. Tinfoil hat theory. But it's just weird to me that all of a sudden they were there with Dr. Shelby.
Maybe he's responsible for Kane's injury.
You know what? I think you're absolutely right. I definitely don't think it's that political campaign. You know, I read an article about how people in his district were upset that he was actively wrestling and not campaigning right now.
Well, his Democratic opponent put it out there saying, why aren't you here representing the people here or taking, you know, this race seriously? And instead you're off wrestling. And well, he wouldn't explain like, hey, this has been a part of my life. you know, and it's going to continue to be a part of my life. You know, I'm very serious about running in this race, and I want to represent, you know, the county. But from time to time, I'm going to go off and I'm going to continue to do what's been a part of my life for, you know, for 20, 30 years.
He should have told him the truth. He should have said, I am the devil's favorite demon. When I am summoned by Satan to go compete for Vince McMahon.
I murdered my family when I burned the house down.
I've done terrible things, and I respect you as a political opponent, but do not F with me. I will torch your house. I will electrify your nipples. I will do heinous acts to you.
Yeah, that'd go over really well.
That's how we should have been truthful, you know, but politicians, you know, anyway. I don't get that. Sasha Bailey should have been so much more. You finally had Bailey snap. You know, the next week, you know, Bailey shows up. I really wanted Bailey to kind of like, I thought there was a chance Bailey was going to join the Riot Squad for a moment. And I really love the idea of like emo Bailey. I think it's just such a cool idea. Like, she takes on that kind of Hot Topic-y vibe and just is like, I'm too old for the little kid stuff now. You know, I think it's relatable for the demo they're going for, and would just be great. It'd just be awesome.
Well, you know, when you talked about Rusev and you were talking about, let's do something different, let's go with somebody that's really hot right now, I think that was the vibe that a lot of people got on Monday night when they set up these two triple threat matches. And, you know, the winner of each match is going to face each other next week. And then that person's going to face, you know, Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. And that looked like, for a split second there, maybe we were all fooling ourselves, but for a split second, it looked like, oh, maybe they will go in a different direction than what we all think. Maybe they're not going to do Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley next week on Raw. And maybe it'll be somebody else that gets the title shot against Lesnar come SummerSlam. Maybe it could be Seth Rollins, who's been absolutely on fire. Or maybe they would go with Drew McIntyre because they got big plans for him. And, you know, Bobby Lashley would still be something different. But, you know, once they announced those two, you know, triple threat matches on the show, I looked at it, I think a lot of other people did too, and said, well, I think we know who's winning these matches, and I know what we're going to get next week. And that's what we got. We got Roman Reigns, Bobby Lashley again next week. I mean, the matches on Raw were really good. They were really good, but it's the same old, same old. We've got these two guys. They already had a match. Bobby Lashley won at Extreme Rules. And by the way, that Pittsburgh crowd, I don't know if they're indicative of everybody, but they didn't give a rat's ass about that match while it was going on. And so now we're going to get this, and everybody believes, well, it's Roman Reigns. He's going to get his win back. And of course, he's going to be the guy that faces, you know, Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. And it's like, wash, rinse, repeat. Here we go.
Man, how badly did that crowd want Drew McIntyre to win?
Dude, they wanted McIntyre and they wanted Rollins. Those are the two guys. And wait, that would have been something out of left field that they could have done. I mean, I know that they had the match the previous week, but that would have been something totally different and fresh. And, you know, they've got their plans. They've got their ideas. I just don't think the crowd is into that. Like, and we've had enough time to realize, like, hey, you've tried this before. This isn't like one of those, like, well, they didn't take it the first time or the second time, but we've got a really good story planned here. We got really good ideas. This has been something that's been going on for a while, especially with Roman, but yet they said, nope. We're going to do it again.
So we got Lashley Reigns, right? Those are the two guys that are going to be fighting to face off against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Brock, I think they keep the title on him. I think that he wins at SummerSlam. I've got this feeling that the old school promoter in Vince McMahon, and probably many guys in the back, says, We like the occasional big elephant, the occasional big draw. It's great that Brock only does like four. We know four times a year we're going to have giant shows to work around, you know, and Bruno held the belt for 10 years and they made a lot of money like that. Brock is going to stay legitimate and continue to be the baddest man on the planet for the foreseeable future. I think they will keep that belt on Brock Lesnar as long as they need to, until there is one undeniable future centerpiece of the WWE to take that belt off of him. And I don't see it in Lashley or Reigns.
Well, I get that mindset. There's a couple questions there though. Number one, what's Brock's contract like? You know, does his contract end come the end of August, or does it end after the next match that he has? Have they already locked him up to a new deal? I haven't heard anything like that, really. I mean, there's been a couple of things about that, but we don't exactly know about Lesnar's contract. It's kind of up in the air, and it's the secret right now, even though most people believe that it ends, you know, at the end of August. It doesn't mean they couldn't sign him to a new deal, though. But when it comes to the booking of this, I think Vince likes that idea of let's keep this guy on as champion. Let's build him up. Let's continue to do this storyline where, you know, people are going to hate his guts, where, you know, they don't like that he's still the Universal Champion and he picks his spots and he doesn't show up and whatnot. But we're at this point now where Brock Lesnar used to be the special attraction. And I don't think he's a special attraction anymore. I don't think people care. People just don't want to see him anymore. They want to see him lose the Universal Championship just because they want to see that title back in regular rotation on Raw and on pay-per-views. And I just think they're at this point now where it's like, you got to cut bait. You've done this long enough where you've played this out and you could have done it here or there. You could have done it at WrestleMania. You could have done it at, you know, Greatest Royal Rumble. For whatever reason, they haven't done it yet. But there comes a time where it just says, we got to cut our losses. We got to do it. And then whoever we put it on, we can build them up. I mean, hell, they can do the Reigns match. I think, I don't know, that could be a mistake, though. But I mean, they can always pull the trigger with Strowman cashing in. Okay, now we believe that this is the guy. He gets the big pop because, you know, he cashes in, plus he beats Roman Reigns. So there's that. I mean, they could do a three-way with Lashley and Reigns and Lesnar. I don't know if people are really going to be into that, but at least it's something a little bit different. I don't have any faith, though, that they're going to do Bobby Lashley straight up against Brock Lesnar. But I just think we're at that point now where they've done enough damage. Lesnar needs to go away, and they need to get that title off of him.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that a lot. And that's why I think they triple down. I think he's going to keep the title. I think he's going to beat either one of these guys at SummerSlam, maybe both. And, you know, we'll go back to creating, you know, titillating WrestleZone headlines about Brock Lesnar's current contract status, and the game continues, and he remains buzzy, and he continues to be a badass, and he keeps the title. And they wait for, you know, I think Drew McIntyre's a good guy to keep an eye on right now.
Yes, I do too.
I'm not shocked to see they're not immediately strapping the rocket to this guy, though. I think it could be awfully damn tempting right now. And, you know, him and Ziggler, it's a good duo. You know, Ziggler is the IC champ. Drew McIntyre is a believable world champ. I shade to, you know, Diesel Shawn Michaels, 100%.
Well, here's the thing about that, though, too. And, you know, Ziggler's back in the forefront, you know, now being the IC champion and get more opportunities to wrestle and do his thing out there. Why didn't he walk out and say, I want to shut out the world championship? I mean, we had six guys that walked out. I mean, why was the IC champion not one of those people?
I think that he's there to support Drew. I think it's an alluring idea to say, we're going to lock down all the gold. I'm going to hold the IC title. Drew's going to be the big bad dude in the room, and he's going to hold the world championship. And I'm fine with that. We're making tons of money as a duo. Why rock the boat?
Why wasn't Dolph Ziggler out there to support his buddy Drew McIntyre when Drew had his triple threat match?
Great question. You know, and
that's all I have, man. Just great questions.
But here's the thing: is Drew McIntyre? He didn't take the pinfall in that match. Finn Balor did.
Right. So, I mean, they're keeping him strong. I mean, they're taking their time with him. Like you said, they could have just done something where, like, boom, let's just push him. I don't think that's the right move right now. I think it'd be too quick. Keep protecting him and keep him strong right now. Keep doing what they're doing. If you were going to put somebody else in that equation for the Universal Championship, to me, there's only one guy, and that's Seth, because that's somebody that people would love to see. I mean, Strowman's the other guy, but I mean, if you're going to have it to where it's legitimately like, oh, right, this guy's going to earn the shot, not just cash in, then Seth would be the guy because the crowd is behind him so much. We've only got the Lesnar-Rollins match once, and that was years ago. And I think that even ended with like a DQ or countout finish, but that's a match I think a lot of people would love to see. I think it could be very interesting, and I think that would be a great main event at SummerSlam, but that's not where they're going.
Yeah, and, you know, Seth is, it's crazy how much more over Seth Rollins is right now than I think a lot of people would give him credit. That burn it down thing is, I mean, that's something people identify him with, and that's only come across the last, you know, 4 to 6 months. You know, that's really been picking up. He's going out there and he's having great matches. I thought, you know, when he lost to Dolph in the main event in that Iron Man match, I was like, all right, well, maybe this is the way they're going to spin him off into, you know, the Universal title picture here. But because that's, you know, sometimes the way it works, but that's not how it played out on Monday night.
No, it's not, you know, but I don't know what they're going to do with him going forward. I mean, I guess I originally had thought that maybe they would do something like a Shield reunion at SummerSlam, but I think Reigns is obviously going to be in that SummerSlam main event. Maybe he won't, but if Dean Ambrose is ready to come back, they could do Ambrose and Rollins, you know, against Ziggler and McIntyre at SummerSlam. They could do something like that. And then, you know, later on in the year, they could add Reigns to the equation. I don't know who Ziggler and Drew would add, you know, to their side, but they could do something there. I mean, I think that would be a lot of fun too. I think they would have several months of material right there where they'd have a lot of good matches.
Rollins is so far past the Shield reunion thing at this point. He's off and finding his groove as a single star in WWE right now. Obviously Roman has, you know, his wave as well, but I mean, he still dresses and like the Shield, comes out to Shield-esque music. You know, he's ready for that Shield reunion at any given moment.
But the whole thing is, like, I think we see him as a single star and a guy that should be at least in the equation for the Universal Championship. It all depends on what WWE has in mind. If they say, hey, we can have somebody else as the Universal Champion. We can have Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman feud for it. And in the meantime, what are we going to do with these other guys? Well, a Shield reunion would be pretty damn hot. I mean, it was going to be until, you know, Roman Reigns got the mumps and then Dean Ambrose got injured. So that's the reason why I look at that going, I don't know if they want to do anything when it comes to Seth and the World Championship right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think Seth's so good right now on his own. I mean, I would hate to see this momentum he's got going right now as a single star be halted because he gets put back into some kind of reunion mode or is there to support other players. I'd really like them to find, you know, credible, fun ways for Seth to continue on as a solo star. Let's talk about Finn real fast.
Okay.
I wanted to get back to this because we were talking about how Drew didn't take the pinfall. Finn Balor. What do you do with Finn Balor right now? I think Seth is hot right now. Seth's a good, Finn is not, in my opinion. I don't know what's going on with Finn right now. When he was like, I deserve to be in the Universal title picture. I mean, I guess he did beat Baron Corbin at Extreme Rules, but it just doesn't feel, it doesn't bite me. It doesn't get me excited to think about Finn in that title picture right now. I guess I don't know what's missing.
They don't know what to do with Finn because I think they look at him going, okay, good wrestler, crowd likes him. They really love his entrance, but because of his size, we don't see him as world championship material. It's like one of those guys that they say, well, you know, he was the world champion one time, and he's one of those guys we can keep in a good position. He'll have good matches. He can lose unless we have some injuries or something happens, and then we can pull the trigger on him. He's like their backup plan. But other than that, I don't think they know what to do with him. It's like, go out there, have a good match, and smile a lot.
What happened to the Demon, right? Shouldn't he be, like, embroiled in really deep feuds where he's driven to crazy places?
Shouldn't he be pissed off about everything that's happened right now, and the Demon comes out in him, and they turn him heel?
Something. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing that's crazy to me is I look at Finn, and I'm like, where's the next feud that's going to result in you getting pushed to a dark place where you become the Demon again? And I think that the Baron Corbin feud could be that. These guys have had great stuff on, the best part of their feud's been on Twitter, you know.
Right. But do they really want to use the Demon for Baron Corbin? Because, like, I mean, I don't think they feel like that's important enough.
Somebody's got to send that guy back to mixology school.
Can you imagine if you're Baron Corbin and there's all this talk about, yeah, man, big guys over on Raw going to get a big push. And the idea is that, you know, they're going to dress you up like a major D, you know, and have you, you know, be, you know, the voice for Stephanie McMahon.
I love it. I think this is actually the most engaging Baron Corbin's ever been on WWE TV. I don't have a problem with him bullying Finn Balor to a place where Finn Balor becomes the Demon and destroys this, or, you know, gets this guy into a compromising position, puts him on his heels. You know, somebody's got to intimidate this guy. You know, you can go that deep and do those directions and you know, play with these characters like that right now. But it's like they always kind of go halfway into it and then halfway back, you know, and that's like Sasha and Bayley. Bailey finally snapped, but we got to do this comedy angle now to explain it. You know, it can't be all one way, you know, and I wish they would just push him a little bit harder.
Well, look at what's going on with Bobby Roode. We're sitting there going, okay, what the hell is going on there? Like, are they going to turn him heel? I mean, I really wonder if he's going to lose his music.
I mean, that would be a great way to turn him heel. You know, that's what Shinsuke kind of did that. He changed his music up so people wouldn't be able to easily do the,
Similar enough, but yeah, it's like the evil version of his music. So, but I mean, it's still got that same, you know, underlying beat. I don't know if they could do that with Bobby, but.
Why Bobby, and this is, you know, I don't want to just kvetch the whole time here, but I don't understand why Bobby Roode debuted as a baby face after being like an amazing heel in NXT.
I'm telling you, it's because of the music. They're like, oh, everybody reacts to the music, so he's got to be a baby face. I'm like, why? He's been in NXT for 2 years. He's had that damn music and he's been a heel.
Drop all of the substance that makes you a character and just smile.
I have never seen Bobby Roode smile this much in my life, in his entire career, until he started on the WWE main roster.
That's his character, man. He dresses like Ric Flair and he smiles. And then everybody sings along with him.
And then he loses.
And he loses a lot.
That sucks.
Well, we talked about, let's talk about the other losers again. We'll go back to Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt here with the B team. I feel like we're all over the place here. I'm trying to keep track.
That's fine. That's what we do, man.
Okay, I'm trying to keep track with my notes. Are we gonna get like tag team Apocalyptico here? Apocalypto?
By the way, do you have notes?
I keep a little piece of paper here with a pen next to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, professional, Brian.
I may or may not have notes. I just was curious if you had notes.
We don't all just sit there in our underwear, Brian.
It's boxers. Hello.
Sorry. But are we going to fun new directions with these two? Or are we? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get where this is going with Matt Hardy, Bray Wyatt, and the B team. Are they going to get thrown? Are the B team going to get thrown into the lake of reincarnation? And we're going to get, you know, the one that is perfect and the brother of Bray?
I don't know. I don't think they want to do that. I don't know exactly where they're going to go with Bray and with Matt. That's another one of those where I don't think they want to go back to that world. I don't think they want to do another compound match. I mean,
why?
They're like in this waiting pattern to where they're just like, all right, what are we going to do with Authors of Pain? Which one of these guys are going to be served up?
It'd be so great if Matt Hardy just had his own half hour weekly WWE Network show, The Hardys, right? They could just do every from the Hardy compound, right?
I have a legitimate question when it comes to the tag team scene on Raw. Where is the bar? I seriously don't know.
Wait, yeah. Do you think Sheamus's neck injury is tweaking with him?
Like, where they been? I haven't seen them in forever. Where are Sheamus and Cesaro? I mean, I haven't heard anything about it. I don't know if it's because one of them is injured or what's going on.
Yeah, I don't have a good, I guess, boom, I should poke around. I remember Sheamus had like that stenitis in the neck or whatever, and he was using the neck hammock and something like that.
Right.
They both are kind of beat up. I wouldn't be shocked if they're both just not getting time off to rest up right now. I haven't heard of any.
Yeah. You know, I assume that's what's going on, but like, we haven't heard anything about them. Like, I haven't even seen any reporting about them. Like, oh, here's the reason why they're not on TV, because they're both banged up. Unless I'm just missing something.
Yeah, no, I couldn't tell you. My gut says they're getting time off to just rehab a variety of injuries. I mean, let's not lie to ourselves here. Cesaro, formerly Claudio Castagnoli, has spent a lot of time on the road with wear and tear. Both of these guys, I'm sure, you know, maybe, you know, just getting some time off.
Kayfabe, like, the name, no, brother. Come on, man.
Well, that's not even his real name. Claudio. Is that his real name? Claudio Castagnoli?
He did that one time where they were filming backstage. Somebody did like a quick, you know, little video, and like they mentioned that name, and he was like, kayfabe the name, brother.
Did you catch the It's Always Sunny reference on SmackDown?
No, when was that?
It was the New Day backstage, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna take it. It was, they're hyping up Kofi to go take on Sanity, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna take him out. Big E called him unsanitary, and Kofi's like, yeah, I'm gonna take him out like the trash man. I'm gonna be like Danny DeVito. And then Xavier Woods was like, yeah, man, birds of prey. Ah! Or birds of war. That's what it was. Ah! Ah! Which is from the wrestling episode with Roddy Piper. It's Always Sunny.
God.
That was a very well-told.
I feel like they get in that reference every week, though. There's something that those guys do under the radar almost every week.
Okay, well, let's move. Can we move on to Sanity New Day talk here?
If you want to talk about them, I was going to talk about Daniel Bryan, but please, let's talk about Sanity.
I don't like the way that Sanity is being portrayed, Brian.
You mean because they've been on TV, and while they've been in a good slot, that they actually won a match at Extreme Rules, and they pointed out, like, hey, that's their first win since they've come to WWE. These guys are wreaking chaos and havoc and terror, and they finally won their first match.
Does Vince hate NXT?
Yes, he hates tag team wrestling, unless it's the New Day.
Does he resent NXT? Because the hottest, one of the hottest acts in NXT, Sanity, and former NXT champion, recent NXT champion, Andrade Cien Almas kickoff matches.
Ah, those guys aren't big stars. I don't care what they did down there in that little circuit. This is the big time. I know how to make big stars.
Former NXT champion Finn Balor.
Ooh. Seeing a pattern here? Is that what you're trying to say? Are we seeing a pattern? Now, mind you, Seth Rollins was the first ever NXT champion, but that was a long time ago.
Anyway, with Sanity...
They almost had a really good match.
Yeah, no, I mean...
It was weird that they did that match, and he damn near won it, so it's one of those where, like, he didn't lose anything in the loss, and he actually probably made himself look better in the eyes of the WWE audience because of that match, but it was... Hey, they want to have AJ wrestle, and he's got to beat somebody, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Back to Sanity.
Okay.
I'm so unhappy about what's going on with Sanity.
It sounds like it. I'm upset that Nikki Cross isn't a part of the group.
Ditto. What the F? Ditto. So these guys are anarchists, right? This is like the Purge.
Sure. They're
just roaming street toughs, right? Mad Max style. I'm not against them having like an entrance song per se, but like these guys should have been jumping up out of nowhere for months. Their first official match should have been at like SummerSlam.
Here's why. Okay. This is Kevin Dunn's dream, is shooting Sanity as they come out and be able to move the camera around as much as he does.
It is packaged anarchy. It is fake. It is not.
You don't say.
It's not my taste. It's not my cup of tea as far as resistance goes. And so,
hey, everybody, we're playing our music and we're walking out. We're the resistance. So you'll always know when we're coming.
If you say that you are chaotic and then do not do chaotic things, it's a disconnect. They're only chaotic
because they laugh when they get hit. That's it. That's chaos.
And I'm such a big fan of Eric Young and Killian Dane and Alexander Wolf as well.
They're going to be chaotic. Shouldn't they be like tearing apart the ringside area, beating guys up backstage all the time, just doing heinous things, you know, at any point? Like, hey, guy pulls up in his car earlier in the day. Well, there's Sanity, you know, I mean, do something like that.
Yeah. You know, go for AJ. Make that his next major foe, right? Build the AJ Eric Young. That would have been more fun at Extreme Rules, and then we could have had our TNA reunion in the main event there.
Sure, why not? I mean, hey, it's a B pay-per-view. You can do that on those shows.
And get those talents over. Sanity doesn't need to win a match against AJ Styles, but I mean, like that. Yeah, I mean, and even if it's not them, you know, let's look here. Who else on the we could Kevin Owens? He's Raw.
That's a whole nother story. By the way, I didn't even bring that up when it comes to Extreme Rules. Okay. Hey, I'm sure Kevin Owens wanted to do that bump. I know it was in the same building where years ago, 20 years ago, Mick Foley took the fall off the top of Hell in a Cell. Do we need to do that bump? Do we need to do something dangerous? And I don't care what was in the announcer's table. I don't care what kind of precautions that they took, because it's still extremely dangerous. So many different things can go wrong. And on top of that, are we really talking about that the next day because it was Extreme Rules? I mean, are people going, oh my God, did you see Extreme Rules? Did you see Kevin Owens with that amazing fall off the top of the cage, what Braun Strowman did to him? That was unbelievable. No, we're not.
No, we're not, Brian. I kind of thought the same thing. But I mean, you know, look, Kevin Owens is living his best life. he wants to be Mick Foley in the same building that, you know, Mick took the fall. And I'm sure he had a blast doing it. And, you know, it created a visual. I don't really know what's going to happen between him and Braun.
Glad he's safe, but I look at it going, you know, do you really need to do moments like that? Especially on a show like this. I mean, this wasn't WrestleMania. This isn't SummerSlam. And no, mind you, me personally, I don't think I ever need to see that bump ever again because it's just too risky. But if you're going to do it, if you insist on doing it and you take other precautions, then at least do it on a show that's big and meaningful. It's like the one that Shane took at the Greatest Royal Rumble. I'm like, why the hell did he take that bump?
You know, people like doing crazy things.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts. It's like, can't you stop these guys from doing this stuff? Come on.
Well, but I mean, like, I think about the, you know, like the Six Flags stunt shows, you know, where these stuntmen that do big falls every day in a controlled environment. And, you know, WWE, I mean, as, you know, good track record for the most part when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, I mean, if they feel comfortable in the space and they want to do, you know, big stuntman things, that's their call. You know, I don't really have an issue with it as much. You know, I'm sure Kevin had a great time doing that.
I think there's a big difference between Six Flags stunt show and the precautions that they take there and what WWE is doing when a guy takes a bump off the top of a cage.
I don't know. That's a good question. We should ask their stunt coordinator.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're still going through that hard table. They're still going onto the concrete. I mean,
I don't know what was over there. I don't know.
I know there's a pad under there, it sounds like, but I mean, that's still a pretty good distance to go from the cage, not just down, but to go out, to go as far out as you have to go.
But isn't that what you want, Brian, is you want to watch people doing things that you cannot do?
No, it scares the crap out of me, man. I don't want to see that guy get hurt. I don't want to see something like that.
He didn't get hurt. You didn't see a guy get hurt.
Thankfully, we didn't. I'm just worried about that time when we do see somebody get really hurt, when something goes wrong. And
you can get hurt doing a lot of things.
I know. You know. I mean, you can get hurt in the ring, you know, just doing a baseball slide or doing something simple. I mean, we've seen that plenty of times as well. So, I mean, there is that side of the argument. It's just, I don't know. We've seen the spectacle of somebody falling off the top of the cage so many times. It doesn't feel special to me anymore. And I just wonder if it's necessary.
Yeah. It's a fair question to ask, Brian. I'm just saying, you know, if Kevin wanted to do it, he's like, we're going to do this match. Here's the spot that I want to do. And everybody's like, you know, okay, we can prepare for this, present it in a safe way. It's fantastic visual. For me, it's like if the feud had built a little bit more, but Braun just kicks this guy's ass all the time.
I mean, Kevin got in like when Braun was telling him like, why don't you fight me? So Kevin fights him and he actually gave him a stone cold stunner and a suck it. And then after that, he just got the crap kicked out of him some more. Including Braun Strowman breaking out of handcuffs. So, I mean, if they had built it up a little bit more in advance, if they had done something more with it, even the night after, where obviously they mentioned it on Raw, but it wasn't like this huge ordeal. I mean, they mentioned it once, I think. Then, okay, I get it, but they didn't even do that.
I don't understand why Braun has the money in the bank. His character is the last character I would put money on the bank.
I'm with you there, man. I thought that was a curious decision, too.
Very weird, especially when you have a guy like The Miz, where he's such in his prime right now. He's, you know, right there on that cusp. If you could find a logical way to slot him into the main event, I think it would click right now in a way that people aren't expecting. That there were a lot of guys that were better. I would love to have seen the New Day pass around the Money in the Bank.
Yep. That's what I wanted to see.
Going into it, I was like, please, that'd be, you know, the assumption is you're going to have Big E do it, but, you know, it could be any one of them, you know.
Yeah. Well, at least with The Miz, we're finally going to get him and Daniel Bryan. I've always been kind of like, why isn't Daniel Bryan going after this guy? You know, shouldn't, like, for weeks, for months, since he's been back. Like, Daniel Bryan has a gripe with this guy. He has a grudge. Go after him. Why? I mean, I understand that Daniel's supposed to be a babyface, but if Miz is this annoying heel that nobody likes, then guess what? We're not going to be mad at Daniel Bryan for going after this dude and trying to beat him up and going after him time and time again. And they've held off on it. And now they, especially with Kane injured, it looks like they're finally going to do it. And we finally got Daniel Bryan, you know, attacking Miz briefly on SmackDown. And it looks like they're finally going to pull the trigger on that feud between those two.
Yeah, and I mean, I find it very difficult to believe that this feud is going to get bungled. I mean, this is easy. You know, these guys have a lot of, you know, input into what they get to do on TV from what it looks like anyway. So I think these guys, you know, you get Miz and Daniel together are going to be able to tell a good story. It'll probably be one of the better things on TV. The real story should be based around how Daniel and Brie, being the most interesting part of Total Bellas, need their own spinoff. And Miz and Maryse are look, we did see a little bit of them in Total Divas, so I guess not totally unexplored territory, deserving of their own reality show. But Daniel and Brie and Birdie, there's a lot you could do there too, you know?
So you're watching all the reality shows.
Oh, Liz and I, yeah, definitely. We're really underwhelmed by this season of Total Bellas.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they don't have me on there, you know, like they did last season. I was the person that got to ask the very important dramatic question, whether or not, talking about the rumor that to Nikki that Cena was going to propose to her in WrestleMania.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's right. I remember this.
When they went to the media thing, you know what the funny thing is? I mean, it's a running joke because I don't watch those shows. And people were always asking me, like, hey, did you guys watch the show this week? Like, we'd always get that question. I'm like, nope. And I said, when they filmed us for that, because originally when they filmed us, we thought it was something for the network. And then when we signed a waiver, they go, oh, this is for E! And for Total Bellas. And I was like, oh, okay. So we had this running joke about, like, oh, we're going to be starring in an episode of Total Bellas coming up here. And then come to find out, there I was in the final episode last year. And they used me asking Nikki flat out, like, hey, the rumor is that John's going to propose to you at WrestleMania. What do you make of that? And that was funny as hell that they actually used it. So I was like, hey, I'm right. I starred in the episode. Everybody thought I was joking. I actually was joking, but it happened.
You're the one that pushed this, the ball in the set the first domino off.
The whole thing is just this dumb work now. It's just like, come on. How far are you going to go this? I mean, there's people like at the Today Show, there's people all over the place that are getting pulled. I mean, it's all work, you know, to build up this reality show.
Yeah. And that's really why this season of Total Bellas has really not clicked. It's a Nikki heavy season, right? It revolves around her and John and their drama. And it feels like the emotions may be genuine on Nikki's end. But John Cena comes across as a robot person who is doing this solely for money and is a loveless killing machine. I mean, I don't want to
be. So he's playing his character when he was coming up and wrestling out in California. Okay. In UPW.
It's a little like, it's like, all right, Nikki, fine, whatever you want. I need a cover. You know, it's like, I don't know, right? There's something.
Well, I love the idea that, like, when he got together with her, like, he had this prenup. And I just have this idea that it was like this 100-page prenup that he just kind of thumped down in front of her going, all right, all you got to do is sign this.
I mean, they're on the Bachelorette, the second to last episode. So the season finale is this Sunday, and then Miz and Maryse debut on Tuesday, for all of you keeping track. They're doing the bachelorette party in Paris, and Nikki is just like so broken at this point, which is like, you know, it's not funny. Like, you want to sympathize with Nikki.
She's not broken. It's BS, man. She knows they're going to get married.
But the whole time she's like, but they've gotten engaged and they broke off the engagement. Now they're engaged.
Yeah, they broke off the engagement. Wink, wink.
And it was very dramatic. And she's in Paris and she's like, this doesn't feel like a bachelorette party. This just feels like.
That's because it's not.
No, and like, it's just. All...
It's a TV show. Don't you notice the camera?
Like it's like the toll of having to pretend that all of these emotions are real is taking an effect on the people involved. And it's making them like sad people. I don't really know how to explain it. You know, they're all just like, I don't know if I want to be part of this anymore.
Dude, it's called a reality show for a reason. They're trying to make you believe when it's not real.
It's like, if anybody else out there, I'm at WZ Rebel over on Twitter. If you have thoughts on Total Bellas going into the season finale, I welcome the discussion on Twitter what is going on, and why is John Cena a loveless killing machine who has no, he has reckless abandon for others' feelings. Reckless. And then it's like,
that's quite the moniker for him. The Loveless Killing Machine, John Cena. Da, 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 da.
It's very, everything's by the book for him, where it's like, oh, well, you disagree with me on this. All right. Well, I guess you need to leave my home then.
Well, Nikki, why don't you come over here? Why don't you give me a kiss on the cheek? Wait, that was too moist. Get the hell out of my life.
He's reversing his vasectomy for her. He's gonna go get the snip undone.
Yeah. You know? Well, you can do that. I mean, you can do it a couple of times apparently, but I can only imagine the pain that goes along with that surgery.
The season started with John Cena going, well, I know last season or the last mansion we all lived in that was mine, I had all these rules and you were all very uncomfortable, and they're all sitting there just terrified of John at the table, right? And he's like,
well, they all thought that he was going to hit like the trap door and they're going to fall into a pit of alligators.
I have an idea I was pitching watching the last episode of Total Billas to Liz about a WWE Network show just called John Cena's Mansion, right? And each week he just invites 8 WWE super fans that would do anything for John Cena to his mansion. And he hosts a dinner.
Oh my God, that'd be great.
And he hosts a dinner each week where he like bets them money to do things that make him laugh. And they're all awful, right?
They're all just there for his amusement and to get his chores done around the house.
Craig, you seem like a nice guy. You're a mechanic. You've got a beautiful wife here, a couple of children. I've read your file before you showed up at the mansion. I'll give you $15,000 to call your wife and tell her you're getting a divorce. I've prepared the paperwork right here. It'll be very legal. You'll never see her again. $15,000 for John. Would you do it?
Oh, and by the way, I get to keep your children.
And the children will live with me now.
Yes.
Nikki wants them.
I will arm them each with a can of Indust and a rag to do the dusting around my mansion because I always have dust.
All those kids that always come out and do the you can't see me when John comes to the ring. Yes. Those are he's acquired them like Pokemon over time.
Oh, that'd be so great.
John Cena's mansion. Each week, 8 John Cena super fans.
Each week. 8 John Cena super fans get the opportunity to live with John in the mansion. But what will he make them do to earn the opportunity?
Right.
Let's find out this week on John Cena's Mansion.
Every week here on John Cena's Mansion, the winner is me, John Cena. I win. All right.
Oh, that'd be so great. I think we got a winner here. I think we need to, you need a pitch. You need to get a meeting with E.
I do. I have one other WWE Network show
that okay.
I thought of this a couple years ago before Ric Flair had his medical problems, but I would have loved for him and Charles Robinson to do a show called The Nature Boys, where each week they get dropped in the forest and Charles Robinson has to take care of Ric Flair in the wilderness.
That might not have turned out well, though.
That would have been great. Charles Robinson would have built them a wonderful home within the first couple hours, right? Mm. Rick would be taken care of. It'd be great.
Well, you know that that Charles loves horror films. Like he collects horror memorabilia. So I wonder if he would just come up with different ways to try to scare Rick out in the woods every week.
Yeah, I'm down for that too. Charles Robinson terrifies Ric Flair in the woods every week. Let's watch that on the network. Sure. Game in 1000% in right after John Cena's mansion.
Mm. All right. I know we got to get out of here pretty soon. Couple last things.
Okay.
SummerSlam. We're building towards it now. Give me 5 matches you think are going to take place at SummerSlam. What do you think of the top matches we could see?
I have a feeling we're going to get Lashley and Brock at SummerSlam.
And no Roman Reigns.
I don't know what they're good. I don't know what they're doing with Reigns. He doesn't come out on top a lot anymore. And Rollins is out there. I kind of see him and Rollins somehow doing something. I don't know if they're at odds with one another or something like that. But I think Lashley's going to beat Reigns for sure. Maybe a triple threat, but I'm going to go Lashley Brock. That's what it says in my gut. Of course, we'll get Ms. Daniel Bryan. We will get Alexa versus Ronda Rousey, which has already been announced. And Carmella Becky Lynch, I think, is definitely in the cards right now.
Yep.
I think we're going to see Randy Orton Shinsuke for the U.S. title. No, that doesn't make sense.
Orton against Jeff Hardy.
You think Orton, Jeff, and Shinsuke does something different?
Yeah, I think he does something different. I think we're going to get AJ Styles against Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship.
Okay. Where's Rusev? Where does he fall now?
I don't know. Maybe he's going to be the guy that would face Shinsuke.
Interesting.
But he's a heel. I mean, that would be heel on heel.
Well, give the people what they want. Let him be a baby.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see Undertaker at SummerSlam? There's been a lot of rumors about that.
Mm.
Who'd he face, though? That's the thing. I'm like, who the hell would he get in there with?
Roman?
They could do that. I mean, that would be the one thing. I think we're going to get a triple threat at SummerSlam. I'm not in favor of that, but I think that's what we're going to get.
Undertaker versus the Bludgeon Brothers?
Oh, God. Don't say that. Yeah, who would he face, though? I guess it would almost have to be Roman. Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to do Taker against Rusev again.
Balor?
Maybe Demon. John Cena. Maybe we get the rematch. Taker, John Cena.
Finn Balor would be fun. The Demon versus the Dead Man.
That would be very fun. I could see that.
That would be fun.
I could see that. Why not?
Get Bray Wyatt. Pull Bray Wyatt out of it. Him and Matt Hardy. Have Matt escort Bray. Bray needs that win over Taker.
He's got to get his win back? Yeah.
Get it back. I was so upset about that.
This isn't Hogan Warrior from back in the day.
Should we talk about Hogan before we wrap it up here?
Let's talk about a couple of things. Let's get to Hulk Hogan. So he's been reinstated back into the WWE Hall of Fame. They put out the statement on Sunday afternoon saying after a 3-year suspension, Hulk Hogan has been reinstated to the WWE Hall of Fame. Second Chance follows Hogan's numerous public apologies and volunteering to work with young people where he's helping them learn from his mistake. And these efforts have led to a recent induction to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America Alumni Hall of Fame. Did you know that he was suspended from the Hall of Fame? Because I didn't know that.
I don't think they officially said anything. I think he quietly was suspended.
Okay. I know he got fired from the company and they weren't referencing him on anything, but yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, so they put that out on their website and on Twitter in the afternoon. And then during the kickoff show, they briefly mentioned it. Like Charlie Caruso mentioned it, but that was it. And Hogan talked to the locker room before the show, and it sounds like they filmed it for the WWE Network.
Of course.
Yeah, which I know there's cameras everywhere. I don't know if that's a really good idea, say the least. That takes away a lot of sincerity out of it. And it's just WWE saying, hey, we've got a feel-good moment from Hulk Hogan. Let's go with this.
It makes me a little uncomfortable the way they're trying to tell the story.
Absolutely, it does, because, I mean, did you see the thing on Monday? So there was this charity or initiative or whatever. They had a video up of Hulk Hogan pushing this WWE like initiative or whatever, right? This charity work. It was up on YouTube for a little while. They had disabled the comments and then they pulled it. And I'm not sure exactly why they pulled it. Was it because of negative reaction, or did it go up there and it shouldn't have, or I don't know, something weird happened with that.
It's weird. I don't really like the way they're trying to tell the story. In my opinion, I don't think Hulk Hogan has ever really apologized for what he said. He's made a lot of excuses, you know. Yeah. Well, he blamed his hometown, right? He blamed your part of town.
Right. He's apologized, but then I guess the way it sounds like he apologized to the locker room the other day was like, hey, I didn't know that there were cameras rolling on me at the time. I didn't know I was being filmed. You know, when it came to me making those comments, and I'm like, it doesn't matter if you knew you're being filmed or not, you still made the comments.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's the problem with this. And see, here's the thing too. Like, I can sit here and I can have my reaction to this. I am not a black man or a woman. I am not black. I do not know how to react to it from that standpoint. And if somebody wants to say, I do not forgive you, you know, I will never forgive you for what you said, because they are black and because they have faced, you know, racism like that before. If somebody's black and they say, hey, I have a problem with this, or somebody else has, there's been racism towards them. Hey, and if they don't want to ever forgive him for this, I totally get it. And I don't blame them.
So with that said, excellent segue here. I have pulled up. I don't know if you've read this yet or not.
The New Day statement. Yes.
I've pulled up the New Day statement here. Do you mind if I read the New Day statement to everybody that may or may not have read it?
Yeah, give the bulky parts in the middle, I think.
Okay. So to the WWE Universe, whoever else it may concern, this is the only statement we'll make about Hogan's reinstatement into WWE's Hall of Fame. We do not wish to spend the energy debating the point because between our kids, our external ventures, and this job, our energy is spread thin enough already. LOL. We are only writing this simply to provide an answer to the many who have bombarded us with questions on where we stand on the issue. We preface the statement by emphasizing that this is our own opinion and may not necessarily reflect the opinion of anyone else affected. How do we feel? Indifferent. We are not happy or sad, angry, or resentful. Who WWE puts into the Hall of Fame is totally and completely up to the company, and from a career standpoint, there is no argument on whether or not Hogan should have his place. We have no problem with his reinduction in the slightest degree. It is impossible to even begin to mention the history and evolution of the business without mentioning his name and accolades. On a personal level, when someone makes racist and hateful comments about any race or group of people, especially to the degree that Hogan made about our people, we find it difficult to simply forget, regardless of how long ago it was or the situation in which those comments were made. But we also do not respond with more feelings of hate. Instead, we just do not associate with the people who convey or have conveyed this negative, hurtful mindset. This instance will be no different. Perhaps if we see him make a genuine effort, I love that. I think that's the perfect statement. If we see him make a genuine effort to change, then maybe our opinion will change with him. Time will tell. Time will tell. Through the course of our lives, people have used racist comments towards us, and it doesn't feel good. But if we stopped moving forward every time we were met with prejudicial hatred, then we would have never achieved our current accomplishments. We know we are worth it. We know our kids are worth it. And most importantly, we know that people that look like us are worth it and always have been. There isn't a person on this planet who will ever be able to say anything to make us think otherwise, because we don't believe, or because we believe in ourselves as people and don't need anyone's approval on that, regardless of who they are. Having said that, his reinstatement won't change anything for us. It will have zero effect on our ability to perform or the level of effort we will put into doing what we love to do, and that is to deliver an entertaining product each week for our fan base. Sincerely, the New Day. Never trade your authenticity for approval.
I think we know where they stand. It's like, okay, we get it. He was an important part of history. WWE wants to put him back in the fold. However, we don't forgive him, and we do not want to work with him. And we don't think his apology has been authentic, and he still has a long way to go to really earn our forgiveness.
I don't think Hulk should have been allowed back into the fold without it showing genuine remorse for what he said, or an apology, which never came. It was always, I was born in Florida, I was on drugs, I was too drunk, I was going through a divorce. There was a lot of excuses. There was no ownership for what he said, which is what always drove me nuts and makes it difficult, I think, for, you know, it looks like not just the New Day, but others to move on as well, especially African-Americans.
I would assume that WWE has spoke with their business partners, with their TV partners, with other people they do business with, and they talked to them about, would you be comfortable if Hulk Hogan was back in the fold with us? And the answer was yes, or else they would not have done this. However, I still think that before they ever said, we're reinstating this guy, we're going to work with him again, that's when they should have Hulk Hogan backstage talking with talent, holding a meeting like this, you know, giving his side of the story. That's where he should apologize. That's when he should start earning, you know, the respect and the trust of other people and getting their forgiveness. And then I would talk to the locker room and get everybody else's thoughts about this before I say, okay, now we're going to reinstate him. I want everybody in my locker room to feel comfortable with this. I don't want this to feel like a business decision. I want this to be a human decision. And we value your opinion, your thoughts. And I understand that maybe you will never forgive this guy. I understand that you were hurt by his comments, but I think we need to have the conversation, and we need to make sure that you're at least comfortable with this before we put this on you and just say, hey, Hogan's back. He's going to talk to everybody. And by the way, we're filming this for the network.
You know, it's an interesting time to do this right now for them. I wonder what kind of a reaction it will be. I've been covering New Japan and Ring of Honor a lot more closely definitely the last year. They afford me a lot of access. And, you know, they're going to Madison Square Garden now. You know, these are companies on the move right now and are gaining attention. You know, while this is something I think there's a portion of the audience, maybe a large portion of the audience is just going to roll their eyes, continue on watching WWE. I do wonder right now how many people are looking for readily available outside options because of decisions like this, you know?
Well, WWE is just made a new business partner to air SmackDown on network television beginning late next year with Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I'm sure they talk with them about it, but at the same time, it's like, are you worried about what kind of negative reaction could come? I mean, it's one thing to put them in the Hall of Fame. We still don't know exactly what they want to do with them going forward. And I think that's the other problem with this too, because there's a couple of things. Is he just going to be an ambassador for the brand? Do you want him on television? If he's on TV, how often would he be out there? How would you use him? Would you want to have him work with other black talent? And are they going to be comfortable with that? Because I got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of people that say, I don't want to do this.
So I don't want
anybody being put in a position where it's like, okay, it's your decision. If you don't want to work with him, you don't have to. But it's kind of like one of those wink, wink. Yeah, we still want you to do it kind of things. I don't want it to come down to that. And I hope that would not happen. But it's something that you have to look at if depending on how they want to use Hulk Hogan going forward.
Yeah. And time will tell. I have a feeling they're going to pull back on the Hogan push, considering the reaction that got, you know, from him being reinstated. But that's just my speculation. They could go full bore with him. Who knows? Maybe he'll help Bobby Lashley be crowned the first ever champion.
That'd be a horrible, horrible decision. Horrible.
I agree. I hope that does not happen.
I hope not too, because the way that would look in just being, oh, this symbolic, hey, it's all okay now. Hulk Hogan likes black people. He's not racist. That, to me, that would make the problem worse. It would make it so much more worse.
Yeah. Well, let's not jump to the worst conclusions here. We'll take it step by step. You know, it's an interesting call on their choice. I think it's very early in the process to see the Hulk Hogan effect on the business. But
right. You know, two quick things. Can I get to two quick things? Because I know we got to get out of here soon.
Sure.
You mentioned the Madison Square Garden show. So Ring of Honor, New Japan, April 9th, head-to-head against NXT TakeOver the night before WrestleMania. Okada, Naito, Tanahashi are going to be part of that show. We don't know about Kenny Omega. We don't know about the Young Bucks because their contracts come up later on in the year. Because this is actually happening, and it's not just, you know, those guys are running a show at Madison Square Garden. They're doing it during WrestleMania weekend. You know, I mean, that's supposed to be WWE's weekend. They're always going to be very protective about that. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, Ring of Honor and New Japan and everybody else that runs that weekend are able to get big crowds is because there's so many people that come for WrestleMania. But I don't begrudge these companies for that, but I mean, that's the way it goes. And I'm sure WWE plenty of times doesn't like it, but it is what it is. But now they're running a Madison Square Garden. They're going to do this big show against, you know, TakeOver. I wonder how aggressive they are going to be when it comes to saying, hey, you know what? We've been interested in some of your talents. Now they're available. We're flush with cash because of TV deals. And plus, we don't like that you're trying to take advantage of our weekend and you're running a big show head to head with us. So we're going to go all out and say, hey, we want to try and land these guys now.
Sorry, I muted my microphone. What do you do with all these guys is my question. They already got too much talent as it is. Like a glut. There's never been a deeper bench of quality talent in WWE than right now. You know, I look at NXT right now and it's funny. Because, you know, there's a not great transition from NXT to the main roster. There's a guy right now in NXT that I think is not getting maybe the best NXT treatment that is going to be a huge star on the main roster, and that is EC3. I think he is much more prepared for the main roster than working the kind of show that NXT is trying to do at the moment.
I would agree. I think he's a better fit for the main roster. It's kind of like Elias.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Totally. I think that EC3 is just going to blow the roof off the place against the main roster. And it's weird, right? You don't get a lot of that anymore. You know, you don't get a guy in NXT where it's like, oh, man, he's good for the main roster. You get a lot of guys where it's like, I don't want him to ever leave NXT. You know, so.
Right. But I mean, if they really wanted to do something with NXT, and I know that if you get these guys, I mean, is it really like, do you really want to spend the amount of money that it would take and put them in NXT? I mean, Kenny Omega and the Bucks are obviously huge stars, but imagine those guys in NXT and what they could do with that brand, especially if, say, they got their own television show. Say FS1 said, okay, we're going to add them. You know, we'll make a TV deal with you for NXT. I mean, do you really want to be paying guys millions of dollars to be on NXT? No, doesn't mean it has to happen forever, but I could see that scenario.
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with all the talent if they buy it up. I don't think it's a bad strategy to take.
It's not, you know.
But they're always going to find more wrestlers. There's so many good wrestlers. The roster, the bench of independent wrestlers is deep at the moment. I think Impact has got an incredible roster right now of non-WWE talent. It's amazing, you know, what's going on right now in the business. So I don't know that just buying up talent is enough anymore.
Yeah.
I that's why I say, like, right now it's about, you know, there's a much more active alternative WWE scene than I've seen since I've been, you know, covering the wrestling, you know, game here in my adulthood. And I think there are people right now that are going to start saying to themselves, like, hey, wait, what else is going on right now? You know, it does feel a little like the Monday Night Wars type era where there's something that could grab people right now and catch WWE off guard.
Right. And I mean, we don't have enough time to go in a really deep discussion about this, but when it comes to, you know, WWE and who they're going to go after, they're always going to go and try to acquire talent. I think now that while talent can make more money there, I think there are going to be some guys that say, you know what? I make good money right now. I'm comfortable. I like my lifestyle. I like the creative freedom that I have, and I'm trying to do something different, and I want to control my career. And I will not have that kind of control if I go to WWE. So yeah, while the money is fantastic, I'm good with the amount of money I make right now. I'm getting good deals. I'm selling my merchandise. I've got good contracts and I don't want to, you know, sell that freedom that comes along with that by going to WWE. I just wonder what guys might do that, you know, especially when it comes to their prime. I mean, maybe later in their careers, that's when they say, all right, well, now's the time to go kind of thing. But, I think that's going to be something to look at because, you know, WWE, if they want to, I mean, they can really break the bank on these guys. It doesn't mean they're going to take the money, but it's going to make it more attractive for them to go. If, you know, the number keeps getting bigger.
Yeah. All right. You got one more thing. I have to leave.
Okay. One more thing. How much of you said you're covering New Japan more? How much of the G1 have you watched?
None of the, I was at the G1 special, but I haven't sat down to watch any of the actual G1 tournament yet.
Why not?
I got too much wrestling stuff in my life,
dude. Okay. Night 2, Kenny Omega, Tetsuya Naito. Watch Omega Naito from night 2 at least.
I'm going to sit down and watch it. I got to go do the arm wrestling thing the next couple days. I'll be back this weekend. I'll watch some G1. I'll catch up with my buddy Ross Berman, who does an incredible job covering New Japan for WrestleZone. I get to watch this stuff at my leisure. I got guys to do this.
Are you worried about it being spoiled, though?
No.
Do you know what happened so far in the G1?
No, don't tell me.
Well, if you're not going to keep up on it, I might as well just tell you.
Don't.
This is old news now. I mean, the day 2 was, you know, several days ago.
I got to go. I got to go catch my employee.
That's a cop out. That's a cop out.
I got to leave, Brian.
Can you watch the network or can you download the match or do something and watch it while you're on your flight?
Look, Brian.
You have notes you have to go over for arm wrestling while you're flying?
I do, actually.
Okay.
So
I know you're a professional. You are a professional, Nick. I get it.
Why be the third degree? I watch wrestling at my leisure for the most part. I watched SmackDown on delay last
night. Is leisure the way you pronounce that word? I thought it was leisure.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to do it like that, I mean, it's not as fun or inventive or creative.
Well, you're just making up a way to pronounce a word now that's incorrect.
I'm doing it in the Queen's speech.
Give me a break.
Queen's language.
The Queen's language. You don't know anything about royalty. All right.
Thank you very much, Brian, for having me on the show.
I'll give you your plug here.
Okay.
Everybody can follow Nick on Twitter. It's WZ Rebel. And of course you can go over to WrestleZone and you can check out Nick's work and the staff there. And make sure you tune into the Bleacher Report app this coming weekend so you can see the arm wrestling contest where you are going to be, or arm wrestling competition where you are going to be. Well, what's your official title again? Table
announcer. It's Thursday night from Norfolk, Virginia. and tune in to right there, Bleacher Report Live, the Bleacher Report app.
Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome, Brian. Goodbye. I'm going to go catch my airplane now.
Thanks again to Nick Hausman of WrestleZone for joining me on the podcast this week. A lot of things to discuss there. Please make sure you're subscribing to the podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, we're on Google Play, we're on the TuneIn app, just about everywhere you can find podcasts. You'll find the Between the Ropes podcast. So please subscribe, rate, and review us as well. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Between the Ropes. We're also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Between the Ropes. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Brian Fritz. Go and check out my latest post on sporting news, the interview with Matt Seidel. That is one I guarantee you're going to enjoy reading that one. And also the announcement on the latest entrance into the Mae Young Classic. That is Deonna Purrazzo, as she has just signed with NXT. And now she's going to be taking part in this year's Mae Young Classic as well. So please go and check that out. Like I said before, the easiest way to find those is just follow me on Twitter at Brian Fritz, and you will find the links to those posts and all my other work over at Sporting News. And also be on the lookout for another podcast this week. That is the plan. I want to do a Q&A podcast to get caught up on that, because I know a lot of people have been asking about when am I going to be answering some questions that you have thrown out there. So please keep throwing them out. I'm going to put another post on Facebook, and also you can send them on Twitter using hashtag AskBTR at our Between the Ropes count on Twitter. That's at Between the Ropes. And you can also email them to us, btrmailbag@gmail.com. So a lot of ways to get in touch with us. We always appreciate it. And again, special thank you to everybody that is supporting us on Patreon. If you would like to do that, please do. Go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Thanks again, everybody. Always appreciate the support. And I'll talk to you again soon here on the Between the Ropes podcast.